Good afternoon, everyone. It is Dr. Nigro again with our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. As always, another fun week of talking with so many of you guys. A lot of you guys came from different parts of the country this week for evals. Appreciate all the support and our social media platform on Instagram, as Julie and I still try to navigate whether our Instagram for Dummies book. I posted a picture of Dwight and Frank Costanza the other day, and Julie's going to take the Instagram account away from me, although I'm just trying to create levity and share some of our own quirks and personalities. So I'll give you all the contact information at the end of the program, as I always do. So today, I've had a request from this for a while, and I've alluded to it. Today we're going to talk about autism. This is a very broad topic. It's now called autism spectrum disorders. And at a personal level, like the word trigger, every time I hear they're on the spectrum, it like sends like needles to my brain. So autism is, it's under what are called the neurodevelopmental disorders. And these are disorders that an individual is born with. These are not necessarily acquired. These are have a strong genetic component to them. And it's a common referral question that I get is, does my child have autism? And even adults will come looking for a neuropsych eval to see if they have autism. And I'll talk about some of the differences between especially males and females a little bit. So autism has a lot of symptom overlap with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, all three of the types. And I can tell you as a neuropsychologist and diagnostician, it's only through testing am I really able to delineate what it is. And I think whenever people hear social deficits, or they can't make friends, or they don't interact well, that people tend to automatically jump to thinking it's autism. And in some cases it is, but a lot of cases it's usually ADHD, or sometimes it could be a combination of autism and ADHD. And there's a wide variety of severity levels of autism. In the previous diagnostic manual, there was what was called Asperger's. I think it was only in the DSM-4, DSM-4-TR. Why it was put in, why it was taken out, I have no idea. But it was kind of, the high-functioning version of autism. Kind of think of like Bill Gates. But autism in and of itself can be, it does range from severity level to, requiring minimal support to requiring extensive support. And one of the assessments that I use is the Gilliam Autism Rating Scale, the third edition. And it's very beneficial to have, from my perspective, I like several people to complete the form. So it might be a parent, a teacher, multiple teachers, maybe a family member. I want to give multiple sources, especially when I'm dealing with autism, because being a pervasive developmental disorder, if you're seeing these deficits, you should be seeing them at home and at school, maybe at the playgroup or Cub Scouts, whatever, being a pervasive disorder. So another test that I use as part of the neuropsych battery is the perception of emotion test, where you're basically having a person respond. Does the word I'm presenting you match the emotion of the person in the picture? So those two tests are really good at picking up the emotional components that may be impaired in autism. But because they're so much... Not misinformation, confusion, I think, in what is autism, what is it not. And sometimes in adults, it could be schizoid personality disorder or schizotypal personality disorders. I can get to those at a different point in time, but those could look like adult versions of autism. So I have the DSM with me. And I'm doing this on purpose because this is a very significant topic. Not that the other ones aren't, but I want to make sure that I communicate the specific diagnostic criteria, because a lot of people, and one person in particular has really asked me, but I know a lot, just from working with patients and work with families, and I just think is the best approach to kind of give you, this is the actual diagnostic clinical features of autism to make a diagnosis. So the first one, criterion A, is persistent deficits in social communication and social interaction across multiple contexts as manifested by the following. All right. Again, across multiple contexts. Number one, Julie with the water. Deficits in social emotional reciprocity, ranging, for example, from abnormal social approach and failure of normal back and forth conversation to a reduced sharing of interests, emotions, or affect, to a failure to initiate or respond to social interaction. So that's one. The second is deficits in nonverbal communication used for social interaction, ranging from poorly integrated verbal and nonverbal communication to abnormalities in eye contact and body language, or deficits in understanding and use of gestures, or to a total lack of facial expression and nonverbal communication, something we would call like paraverbal communication. So in doing a neurobehavioral eval, one of the things I'll assess for is what are called paralinguistic functions. And you ask, you want to assess somebody's ability to, their what's called emotional prosody. Can they repeat a sentence in an angry tone of voice, in a happy tone of voice, a sad tone, and a surprised tone? Okay. Okay. So criterion B, and this is the really important one, because a lot of people, they focus so much on the social deficits and the social impairments that they forget that this is another important part of the autism diagnosis from the DSM perspective. Criterion B, restricted, repetitive patterns of behaviors, interests, or activities as manifested by at least two of the following. One, stereotype repetitive motor movements, use of objects or speech, simple motor stereotypes, lining up toys, flipping objects, echolalia, which is basically just repeating back what someone else is saying, idiosyncratic phrases, okay? Number two, insistence on sameness, inflexible adherence to routines or ritualized patterns of verbal or nonverbal behavior. And there's extreme distress at small changes, difficulties with transition, rigid thinking patterns, greeting rituals, and needing to take the same route or eat the same food every single day. Very, very important distinction. When people are kind of leaning more in this direction, you don't necessarily see this as much with ADHD. When I'm going through my structured diagnostic clinical interview and the referral question is possible autism, this is a very important criteria, because I can get the social deficits and I'm kind of like, all right, between ADHD, is it maybe anxiety, is it depression? But it's the second criteria B, where you have the behaviors, the interests, the activities. And it's a very, very rigid mindset. And I've worked with enough individuals with autism, even early on in my career. And I could tell you from experience, the slightest change in routine, even working in a residential facility in undergrad, I mean, it was like, I don't even know how to describe it. It becomes explosive. Not that the bad people, but it's just like there's it's such a black and white world in terms of how individuals with autism view things. Number three, highly restricted, fixated interests that are abnormal in intensity or focus. So, like, for example, a strong attachment to or preoccupation with unusual objects, excessively circumscribed or perseverative interests. So, you know, you can be like, why? You see this a lot in institutionalized settings. Rain Man, Julia Roberts, was a great movie with Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman, but it depicts what's called savant syndrome. And I did work in undergrad with a professor who specialized in working with savants. They used to be called idiot savants, but we've evolved. We're still evolving in the field with terminology, but it was amazing. And if you look up George and Charlie, these are brothers that were both autistic savants, and they were number calculators. You know, say, okay, what date would June 3rd, 2075 fall on? Thursday. But their IQ, they were severely intellectually impaired, and you could watch YouTube videos, and occasionally they got it wrong. But one thing they could never figure out is how they were able to make the understand the change from the Julian to the Gregorian calendar when they're intellectually impaired, and they were able to understand the shift in the calendars. So if you really want to look at like savants, where you have our artistic savants, Temple Grandin is an individual with savant syndrome. She's a speaker, high functioning, but she's really able. I don't know if she's savant syndrome or she's autism. I think she has high functioning autism. But I would definitely encourage you to look up Temple Grandin. I don't know if she's a professor, but I know she does a lot of speaking, has written some books. My calendars are so. I remember this from my professor, why calendar calculating is so prevalent is because one of the most common gifts that people are given or have in their residential facilities are calendars. And if you're isolated to your room or you're relegated there because of physical handicaps or limitations or cognitive deficits or behavioral problems, and you're only staring at a calendar, that's kind of why a higher prevalence, why calendar calculating is the most significant one. But with Rain Man, it's a great depiction of autism and savant syndrome, but it's inaccurate in the sense that he has multiple abilities, which is not found in autistic disorder or savant syndrome. And there, when Julie and I got married, my brother and his my sister-in-law. Got me, it's in my office, and those of you who've come to see, you've seen it. His name is Paul Padgett, and he is the only case of acquired savant syndrome. And they got me, it's a picture of the perfect seashell. And he was, I think, in New York, was at a bar, got beaten up, suffered brain damage, and did I talk about him?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. You listened. I already talked about him. But, it's a really, really cool case. Look up Paul Padgett. But I'm just saying I'm moving off of the savant syndrome. Number four in terms of criteria B, hyperreactivity to sensory input or unusual interest in sensory aspects of the environment. An apparent indifference to pain, temperature, adverse responses to specific sounds or textures, excessive smelling or touching of objects, and visual fascination with lights or movements. So this is where you get, the sensitivity to tags. And I can't eat this type of food because it feels rough or it hurts. And it's almost like the nervous system is like flipped, inverted, where it's painful. It's literally painful for these individuals. I mean, imagine, with a fire truck going by, it's almost like a PTS, a war veteran with PTSD hears a helicopter and drops to the ground. So these are ingrained, and again, they range in severity level. And that's why, getting a full neuropsych eval to, one, confirm the diagnosis, because there's often, we want to also include intellectual assessment if there's a question of intellectual disability. And, some individuals can live very, very functioning lives. Other individuals with autism, autism used to be called Kanner syndrome. It actually used to be called childhood schizophrenia in the early beginning. And I think the work of Bruno Bettelheim, he had talked about the schizophrenogenic mother was related, but his work turned out to all be falsified. Criterion C, Symptoms must be present in the early developmental period. This is not something you develop later on in life. Okay, it's neurodevelopmental. But important point: the symptoms may not become fully manifest until the social demands exceed the limited capabilities and capacities, or may be masked by learned strategies later in life. Now, I mentioned the difference in males and females, and specifically with females, and I've seen this and I've tested individuals. In females with autism spectrum disorder, there is something called masking. And what that is the individual is really not able to pick up on the social cues of the environment. But as a function of being, you know, learning, okay, I'm with a group of my coworkers, someone has said something that is apparently funny, everybody's laughing, so I'm going to laugh, but I have no idea why I'm laughing. So you're basically putting a mask on to fit in, but there is a self-awareness that I really don't know why I'm laughing or why I'm engaged in this behavior. I'm really very much playing like a role. Not like what I talked about in the borderline episode. This is again a neurodevelopmental disorder, and this masking is really a compensatory strategy to be able to, you know, navigate the social world. And I think from talking to people, there's a lot of shame associated with it as well. But listen to the last episode I did on shame off you. Criterion D, symptom cause clinically significant impairment in social, emotional, or other areas of functioning, academic, occupational. And criterion E, these disturbances are not better explained by intellectual disability or global developmental delay. Intellectual disability and autism spectrum disorder frequently co-occur. And then to make a comorbid diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder and intellectual disability disorder, you want to really get a full neuropsych eval. Because, again, these autism, again, the very severe ones are pretty, I wouldn't say clear cut, but regardless, if there is autism, the assessments that we have are able to give, you know, in the Vineland, the adaptive behavior rating scales, the comprehensive form is great because that's really able to delineate how somebody is, they're functioning, you know, self-care, ability to live in the environment, ability to you know, communication, muscle movements. There's other ones, but I really like the Vineland. It's exhaustive. It's usually completed by a parent or caregiver, somebody who really knows the person well, and it's very, very helpful in treatment planning because there's several hundred questions, but it really is all the different domains and demands of kind of our daily functioning. So I think, I don't know if Julie wanted to say anything because she does medicate a lot of people with autism and they present with, well, Asperger's isn't even a diagnosis anymore. So there's no need to talk about it.
I think a lot of people think it's the same thing. So what's the difference?
Asperger's was only in the DSM-4. Might have been the 3, but I think it was only in the DSM-4.
A lot of people talk about people having Asperger's.
But there is no Asperger's.
So what is
it's all under high function. It's all under autism spectrum disorder, and you're basically rating severity level. So a mild case of autism, if people can conceptualize it, I think it's F84.0 is the diagnostic code. Let me see am I right on that one. Yeah, it was F84.0. So a lot of times, depending on the severity level, there can be comorbid psychiatric conditions, anxiety, depression, bipolarity, even genetic conditions like Fragile X syndrome. Depending on the severity level really dictates the type of support and intervention an individual will need. The lower the severity, the less supports an individual is going to need, and you're usually working with what's called ABA, applied behavioral analysis, where a lot of treatment in the home, individual psychotherapy, you're really imploding the individual and creating as much structure. Because as I said, you know, when you have that rigidity of that and need for that sameness in the environment. And, you know, that's, you know, you can work on the social emotional stuff from a therapeutic perspective, but the criterion B, where it's all the behavioral stuff, that's really where you need the in-home therapy services, applied behavioral analysis. And I've worked with parents who've done a phenomenal job. And if they've shown me pictures of their home that which looks like a treatment center, but it's amazing. You know, things are color coded and everything is, you know, and it's really trying to decrease, you know, that level of unpredictability, and so, but something very, very subtle, you know, that you're out to dinner with your child with autism and, you know, a baby cries and that noise is just intolerable. They can really just literally fall apart, but it's not their fault. Just like with a lot of the other psychiatric disorders, you know, people need to own their stuff. But I think, again, definitely getting a full neuropsych eval is crucial. And I know Julie has worked with a lot of people that have come in with, you know, and on the higher end. But sometimes there can be psychosis with autism. They, I mean, you're not immune to be having schizophrenia or bipolarity. But I would say ADHD, anxiety, depression, and intellectual disability disorder are probably, from my experience, the most common comorbid diagnoses that could go. Oh, not OCD. It can be comorbid with it, but that's really where you need the testing to be able to disengage. Is it OCD behavior, not obsessive compulsive personality, but OCD behavior, especially when in the criteria B. So it's really important that you have this, in making the diagnosis. Criterion A are the social deficits, and criterion B are the behavioral deficits or impairments or quirks or whatever. But is it a disorder that can be treated? No. Are cured? I mean, no. Is it a disorder that could be managed and managed well? Yes. Absolutely, but it really depends on what is the level of impairment, and I could only tell you that if I did a full neuropsych eval, and you know, being able to rule out any other comorbidities is crucial in working with individuals with autism.
And you're sure that Dustin Hoffman didn't have autism in
Rain Man? He did have autism. He was an autistic savant, but they don't have multiple abilities.
Okay, so I guess I'm not going to say a lot, but what I will say is that it is definitely not a relational disorder. And what I mean by that is, as a treatment provider, it takes a very long time to build a therapeutic relationship with people who are on the spectrum, especially the less high-functioning people, because they require a lot of patience and a lot of support and family support and community support in school. Early intervention is the best way, ideally. But and I love the movie Rain Man. I mean, if you're going to rent it and watch it, because it's a beautiful story about exactly what I'm talking about. It's the lack of the ability to be relational. So with people like this, they don't understand social cues. They are very rigid about, and I don't mean they as their, you know, it's just part of, like, they have a very rigid lifestyle.
And you can also see the frustration with family members.
Because it makes them feel safe. So this is how they develop the ways in which they survive in their life. It's really quite astonishing, if you think about it. They're figuring out, how can I cope in this world with the deck I've been dealt. And I have, yes, I have treated people with autism and all the way up through the high end, mostly, but historically speaking, I have worked with adolescents and adults with autism. Most of the time you're trying to assuage and treat anxiety. You know, that these folks really need a predictable world. They need a predictable environment. And that's what families try so hard to do, is to help them
grow and expand and evolve, but it takes a lot of extra patience and understanding and compassion. And usually we're treating anxiety with medication. Sometimes, and this is very often the case, because of the level of irritability, sometimes there are cases where people become so irritable that we have to use other medications in order to control temper, or irritability, or, you know, try to prevent outbursts, where, you know, the outbursts, you know, having a tantrum at home when you're small is one thing, but as you get older, when you, it looks like tantrums, and sometimes as we get older, it takes a community to help versus just help from your parent or your caregiver or your foster caregiver or whatever the situation may be. But I love Rain Man, and the thing I love most about it is, of course, if you haven't seen it, you probably all have seen it, but it's a relationship between two brothers who were quite estranged from one another. Dustin Hoffman, what was his name? I forget. But he was institutionalized, so he was living in a hospital, and he had his routines. He watched Judge Wapner at 4 o'clock every day, and he had his notebook, and he had to write down everything and everything. And he was a genius. But, you know, the brothers were not close at all. But it's an interesting story because Tom Cruise is the brother who actually needs the brother. He's quite narcissistic, actually, as a character. And long story short, they get into all kinds of situations and they grow closer, or at least Tom Cruise grows closer to his brother. And there are moments when he's tried to hug him and tried to be close with him and show him affection. And it was brutally rebuffed. The response was really kind of, it's absolutely a unique but perfect example of what that might be like for someone who has autism. They don't feel super comfortable with a lot of touch. So like Corey said about, you know, they're ripping tags off their shirt. They like comfort. They like routine. They like, you know, the sensations, the physical sensations are very important to them. Again, I sound like I'm talking about them like they're in a group, but it really is quite a unique condition, and it is treatable. I don't know that it's curable, but I do think it's treatable and can be well managed. Sometimes we'll use antipsychotics like Risperdal. I hate throwing names out there of medication regarding this because every case is very different. But I did say OCD before because a lot of these folks look like they have OCD. Adolescents particularly who have not had formal testing, neuropsych testing, do look as though they have severe OCD. And I don't mean severe as an acute OCD, which is part of having, you know, strep throat and that whole other PANDAS avenue, which is very different than what I'm talking about. That's a very acute onset of OCD symptoms coming out of nowhere. And it's related to strep throat and a condition we call PANDAS, which is a totally different treatment modality. It requires medical treatment, usually antibiotics. However, the OCD is so, I feel like, it's worth looking into if you see your child, adolescent, or someone close to you having severe OCD, especially in the younger stages. Because like Corey said, this is something that is there from the get-go. It's not something that you're all of a sudden going to be when you're 19 or 20. But if you have all these years, you're going through like these really, really intense bouts of anxiety where lots of things are intolerable regarding the senses, and the behaviors are starting to look really difficult and hard to manage, then that's, but there is a touching moment in this, just to wrap this up, I'm sorry I'm rambling, but a touching moment in the movie was when they touched their heads together, the foreheads together. And you just could not not, you cannot not cry at that moment. It's just the most touching thing that after all that time, he's tried so hard to reach his brother emotionally and have a connection with him. And he actually succeeded at doing it. And it's a beautiful story. It really, truly is. So anyway, that's something you could think about it. And thank you for listening. And please bear with us with the Instagram. My daughter said, "Mom, you look like an imposter page." And I was like, "Oh no, what are we going to do?" And I'm not a real bobblehead fan. So when I saw that the other day, I was like, "Cor, what are you doing, for crying out loud?" So bear with us on that front. We'll get it eventually. And thank you so much for all that you guys do and following us. God bless you. We love you. And we're so grateful for you.
You're doing movie reviews now? So, yes, to answer Julie's question, Dustin Hoffman is autistic, but he's autistic savant. And the point I was trying to make is that savants do not have abilities in multiple domains. So hopefully this answered questions for you guys who want to know about autism. We could certainly revisit this. As always, the earlier you can identify this.
Yes, get testing. The earlier you identify any of this behavior that's odd, it's usually odd, you can get the services that you need. You need a neuropsych eval to get services in place. That is 100% spot on. So all you parents out there, any concerns, definitely don't give up hope. But I would recommend
at least in the United States, you'd have to have the IQ testing. To get like disability services, or if there's residential placement, or to get on like the public health plan of insurance. But an autism diagnosis, not that you want anybody to have something wrong with your child, but that opens you up to all. That's kind of the golden ticket for services for social, emotional, behavioral, academic. So, again, hopefully this was informative. And what are you doing? Thank you for Julie's comment. But I would definitely, to get a better sense of it, if you're not familiar with autism, definitely check out Rain Man. It's a great movie. Probably are others. Well, we're not doing movie reviews. So, Julie's throwing my train of thought off. All right. So, again, until next time, feel free to reach out to me at psychologyunplugged@outlook.com. Get a hold of me directly through Psychology Today. You can get on our follow us on our Instagram page, which is psychology_unplugged_. Again, on Instagram. Or you could contact me directly. My cell phone number is 617-750-9411. East Coast Standard Time in the United States. So thank you to everybody who follows this program. I'm still hoping someday to get a call from Bruce Springsteen to hang out with him. Anyhow, Julie rolls her eyes.
You never know. But
we have fun with this, and hopefully we're impacting lives in a positive way. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and I will talk to you. Bye, guys.